very upset. Because they were all piled in to crowd in the Prabhupada. With me in the car, they couldn't crowd pile in top. So I rode in the car with all the Swamis and Prabhupada. And then when we got to Vrindavan, I was very ill still. So I don't I wasn't present for many of the things that happened in that first day. But there were some very historical things, because this was really the first time that any white-skinned Vaishnavas, a lot of white-skinned Vaishnavas were in Vrindavan. So it was a very big event for Vrindavan. It was, everyone in Vrindavan was talking about this. And so many people came to visit Prabhupada at that time. As you're going down this, it was called Chatikara Road then, and now it's Bhaktivedanta Swami Mark. So if you go down the cross, the four corners where, you know, we go straight through to get down to Loy Bazaar, and if you turn to the left, you go down Bunky Bihari side.
Yes.
Yeah. So just as you're going straight, now those buildings are all totally different. But two buildings from the corner was this building called Saraf Bhavan. Mm-hmm. So that's where we stayed, in that place.
Also, Srila Prabhupada was staying.
Yes, he stayed in Saraf Bhavan. So it's really nice, this one man, his name is Chirodakshai Vishnu, he wrote a little book, and that's available up there, about that one stay with Prabhupada in Saraf Bhavan.
Cool.
It's a very, it's fairly accurate account. And he was about 8 years older, he was an Indian body devotee, and of a certain nature, Prabhupada treated him very carefully, this man. He's a little different than all the young dancing white elephant children. But he arranged largely for that stay in Saraf Bhavan. So that was the second time I was with Srila Prabhupada being sick. But there were some very wonderful things that happened. As I mentioned, there was this 67 time with Srila Prabhupada in Radha Damodar Temple, getting his strength back from this stroke he had. And then this next time was the cleaning in 71. And then this is December. And Prabhupada decided that he was going to spend one night in Radha Damodar Temple, away from Saraf Bhavan. So he went with Shamsundar. Do you remember who the other devotee was that went with Prabhupada? Does anybody remember by reading? Shamsundar was one. It could have been Nanda Kumar, who was Pujari, also a Pujari. It could have been Aravinda, I'm not positive, or even Prajumna. It could have been one of those three men. It wasn't Srutakirti, he wasn't a servant yet. So anyway, Prabhupada went there for the night, and I heard wind that he was going to go. So as I say, I was still in bed, most really down in bed. But I asked for my girlfriend Palika to get a map, and I was looking at the map of Vrindavan, and I got up at 12:30 in the morning, and I got dressed, and I somehow in the dark of night, nobody was up. I went through Vrindavan and found Radha Damodar Temple. And I went inside the front gate, and there's a courtyard there, Prabhupada's room is on the right. And inside of Prabhupada's sitting room, there was one light bulb. And as I explained, there were these wooden shutters. So through the wooden shutters, you could see a little bit of light coming from outside his room. The shutters were closed. And the door to his room was like these, the two doors that opened up. One was a little bit open, so you could see a little shaft of light also coming. So I went in the courtyard and I didn't make a peep. It was very quiet. I just started chanting japa. So after some time, I swear this is just mystical. All of a sudden, those doors are thrown open like this. Prabhupada says, Yamuna, what are you doing here? I didn't make a peep. There was not a sound. And I very meekly creeped up to the door. I said, I'm chanting japa. Chanting japa. He said, this is a very wrong thing you have done. He said, in Vrindavan at night, there are dacoits. They will slit your throat if they see just a little tiny bit of metal. He said, it's very dangerous at this time of night to be. Said, never mind, you have come. Sit and chant. But first he chastised.
I heard this portion in Dinamrit.
Oh, really? I don't know. I didn't know if you put that
in. I could not understand exactly what happened in this thing. Now I could very clearly make
it out. I haven't read that book for a long time. I don't know. I sent in many things to Satsarupa, but he used some and some he didn't use. Anyway. So that was very memorable. So that's next time I'm with Prabhupada. This is time three. So with Prabhupada and Vrindavan. Then we traveled with Prabhupada a lot those years from 70 October to 72 March. Both the cornerstone was laid for the Vrindavan and the Mayapur project. They were our first two pieces of land for cultivation, for building a center. So Prabhupada sent my husband and myself and this Chirodakshai to start Vrindavan Temple. Three devotees. So, off and on from March 72 until October of 74, those few short years, just some months, seemed like many, many lifetimes with Prabhupada and Vrindavan. They were so intense, every second of every day trying to serve Prabhupada in Vrindavan was so intense that time took on a total different dimension. Just like Nimesh, I think 2 days ago, said, oh, we were in the car, he said, this is going by so fast. So, for all of us who have been sharing this Vrindavan experience, have you seen time go in another way? You're aware of time on a different level in the Dham. This Vrindavan Dham, it looks like Delhi in some ways, but it's actually a very different energy here. This is Krishna's land. And imagine if at your age, your spiritual master just dropped you in this place with about as much knowledge as you have of India now and said, build a temple. So it was very challenging. It was a big, huge, huge, huge challenge. And everything we did, I think, was wrong. I don't think we did a right thing from the moment we landed here. I mean, we were just had so little knowledge, no language, barely any knowledge of the culture, certainly no knowledge of business. You know how hard a business is with all the qualities you have and the degrees you have and the family you have, the education you have. So we have none of this, none of this. And we're in the Dham. So that was almost a segment, that's segment four of Prabhupada and Vrindavan. Those are the four segments that we had. And that segment would take a long time to tell you about. It was a very, very, very long and challenging time with Prabhupada. Certainly the most difficult service that I ever tried to render Prabhupada was being a part of the construction project. I was the only woman on that party. So it's different for you ladies. You have one relationship with your husband, one relationship with your husband's family, one relationship with your own family, and you have to juggle both. But I didn't have children. You both have children. And so my husband and I, our whole lives were just this project to serve Prabhupada. That's all. There was nothing else in our lives for those months other than to try to do this project. So there's one caveat, one special circumstance for that, that when we were given the land for the project, the people who gave the land said that if the building was not opened within 2 years of giving the land, they legally could take the land back. So there was a very strong push from Prabhupada to finish the construction and open the temple within 2 years. So March 72, April 72, 73, April 74, we were supposed to. So that was extended to Janmashtami of 74. We're given a little extra time. So I think you know that that's very nicely mentioned in the Lilamrita. Dina Tarni, that's when I met her. Summer of 74, really. My first time you mentioned it, 73, mm-hmm. I wasn't here. Mm-hmm. So we were not able to finish that building. And, you know, I don't know exactly why, but I was still the only woman. It started with the three of us, Chiradakshaya, Gurdas, and myself. Chiradakshaya left that first year of 72. He couldn't, for one reason or another, that didn't work out. And then by the time 74 came, we had a crew of maybe seven brahmacharis, and Sarab was our architect. I think we had maybe a good 12-man party, sometimes 14. And I was still the only woman on the project. And it was a very difficult position for me as a woman, because Prabhupada gave me a lot of responsibility. I was supposedly the head of a department. My department was the deities. So the other department totally was the construction of the temple building. So there was really just two departments, constructing the temple, the deities. And he put the deities separate. I was also supposed to collect all the money for the deities. And I was terrible at collecting money because I had to do that alone also. So I'd have to go to Delhi alone on the train and then go go door to door and knock on somebody's house and try to collect the money for that. So I wasn't very good at that. So anyway, I was very good at a lot of things, but I just tried because Prabhupada asked me to. So that was a long period. But the temple was not opened, and that was so hard for, I think, each person on our party had kind of what you call a nervous breakdown. It was such a stressful thing. Why was it stressful? Many reasons, but mostly because that summer Prabhupada almost left his body from that was so hard. He became, when he came to Vrindavan and he saw the temple was not ready to open, he got so sick that he couldn't even walk. He couldn't walk. He would lie in his bed and moan in pain. If he had to go to the bathroom to pass water, one man would stand on one side, one man would stand on another, probably put his arms across their shoulders, and his feet would drag across the floor. So to see Srila Prabhupada that sick, I had no way to process the pain that we had caused. So that was a big test. One way or another, the temple was opened March 75. Ram Nomi, and just at that time I separated from my husband. He took sannyas under Prabhupada's requested him, and also it was time to separate. He was making young sannyasis in those days, so that was just when I met Dina Tarni. She was passing through that summer of 74 to get her visa in Nepal. And she offered me to come to get away from Vrindavan because of the stress to London, Radha Gokulananda, where they lived. And so Prabhupada gave permission, and temple opened. So that's kind of the answer to your question of the four times in Vrindavan. The fifth time was when I came to Vrindavan in 1976. I left in 74, then 76 I came back in Kartik. So that's time five of Prabhupada. And I came here with the aim to ask his permission to write this cookery book. Because many devotees had asked me if I would compile a book. So I thought etiquette-wise it was proper to ask the spiritual master first, get his blessing. So I did that. And I remember when I came in, he was sitting in his room, in this building that is his quarters. In the room now, it's kind of like a museum. You know the main room that you come into, where the room that he passed in with the bed? So, Radhaji, would you close that front door because of the monkeys? You know, it has to be closed. And then, so after that main room, if you come into the main room and then you turn right to the left, that room was his dining room. That was, now it's just got some, I think Prabhupada in a rocking chair or something. But actually that's where he took prasadam. Over in the corner. That would be nice if they had it the way it was. Anyway. He was sitting there, and I took, you know, what is it, the Taj and the Matura, and morning 7 o'clock Taj, and then took a rickshaw from Matura. So Prabhupada was just before taking his lunch, and he had his legs out like this straight underneath his desk, and I remember his ankles were like this, big, like grapefruits. And his feet were a little blue. And I was so shocked. So I paying obeisances and looked up. And the first thing he said, he didn't say, it was like I had just seen him yesterday, the day before. He said, so I'm an old man, I may die at any moment. So his body's finished. Went like that towards his feet. So Prabhupada was very candid with me and very matter of fact. And when I was in his service off and on from 67 until this 74, engaged as his cook, mostly his cook. One short period where I was a little more than that. I said, is that your feet? Is it there like this all the time? My kidneys there. Oh, yeah. So then I spent a few days in Vrindavan with Prabhupada, that Kartik of 76, and asked him many questions. I saw him sit underneath the tamal tree. He had always promised that when the temple was built, he would sit under the tamal tree with his disciples. So that was a very wonderful experience for me to see that the temple was finished then, and Prabhupada was doing as he said. He felt the tamal tree was extremely sacred, and I was a little unhappy here to see that there's signs underneath the tamal tree advertising things. So he wouldn't have wanted that at all. He almost cut the tamal tree down because he said the devotees would not honor it properly. I think he must have been able to see the future. But he said the tamal tree, underneath it, you can take just little bit of dirt from the tamal tree and mix it with Vrindavan Ramanriti sand and get a coconut husk and clean the arti paraphernalia with that, because we had planned brass, not silver arti paraphernalia. He said that's how you honor the tamal tree, and otherwise you sit under and around the tamal tree for kirtan, for special kirtans. So he was very glorious to see Prabhupada in the afternoon I was here about 5 days, to see him sitting under the tamal tree with his disciples, even though he was very sick. He had to sit in a rocking chair then, under the tamal tree. It was very, very glorious time. And another chastisement, he was always chastising. I had one god sister who was a photographer, Vishaka, and her husband was also a photographer. Then later they took some footage with cameras, so now they've put a lot of this footage on DVDs. I don't know if you've heard of them, but what are they called?
Following
Prabhupada. So anyway, I brought a camera. And I got up from sitting down under the tamal tree and picked up the camera and went way off to the back to take a group shot. And the minute I stood up with that camera in my hand, he said, "What are you doing?" Mm-hmm. I said, "Taking a photograph." He said, "No, sit down." Mm-hmm. He didn't want me to take pictures. I don't know why, but he didn't. And he never said, Vishaka couldn't get this far in front of him with a camera walking backwards and he wouldn't say a word. Does that answer your question a little bit?
So wonderful. So wonderful. Traveling back to the very same place. Where
I've done that a lot this trip, more than ever. I think I've thought, I've spent many hours in that world since I've come here this time. More because Dina has taken these three every day, most every day, on some transcendental magic carpet to the lotus feet of great saintly Vaishnavas, and they've prayed and worshipped for that Sangha in individual ways and relished, you know, just very deeply when they come back there. You know, there's auras around all three of them from that beautiful experience. But so I stayed back a lot of that time because I'm a little handicapped with mobility just now. So I read the folio and go into like meditation on that. It's been very wonderful.
How did you meet Maharaj for the first time?
Was Prabhupada?
No, Srila Radhanath
Swami. Oh, Radhanath Swami. Well, that was in New Vrindavan. Well, the first time he was at this...
Mumbai.
He was at a pandal, the first Mumbai pandal. He tells that story very often. That would be 71, I believe, March. Or 71 March now. And that was a very big event. And he was just a yogi then, or maybe 19 years old, but nonetheless a serious yogi. He, from a last life, he was a yogi.
How old is he now? What is his age?
Oh, 50-something.
55, 56.
Yeah.
He died 58 years back.
58.
It's
about your age.
I thought he was my age.
Yeah,
he's teenage. He's not 58 completely.
Yeah.
So he was 21.
So he was 21, 20, 19, that's why I said 19. So 20.
The year I got married, he turned 50 that year.
Gotcha. So he was, there were purported, you know, 30,000 in the pandal. So we were on one stage you know, the pandal had electric lights in it, those bars of electric lights and big, walkways, rastas, and then the ropes, and then people sitting on duddies all over. Huge pandal. And Radhanath Swami evidently entered at the very, very farthest end of this pandal, and he had on his yogi robes, and I think he had long black hair. I think he had maybe dreadlocks even, maybe. I think like Carol on his head.
Yes.
And Srila Prabhupada from up on the stage saw him out of all the 30,000 people.
That is most amazing.
It is very amazing. But it's appropriate. It just sounds so right. It's like knowing that I was in the courtyard. And he told my husband, Gurudas, he said, go get that boy. And he just jumped down and ran, took Radhanath, brought him up. He said, you come sit with us. So I guess that's the first time I really met him. First time I had an exchange with him, Tina and I were living in New Vrindavan. I remember that very well, and it was by Prabhupada's palace, below Prabhupada's palace. Do you remember that?
Mm-hmm.
I remember it very well.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked him the question what his relationship with Prabhupada was since he had left the planet. And I think he took about 2 hours to answer that. And I was so impressed with his answer and his consciousness of Prabhupada, even though he didn't have very much association with him. And it was so deep that I was really impressed with him. So that's the first time I really had a meeting with him. What was your first time that you remember?
I think New Vrindavan as well.
Do you remember that day or that instance?
I don't remember that.
I remember it so
instance.
Well.
Maharaj wanted to buy Prabhupada's book, so He didn't have money, so he started begging for money, and from that begging, when he got those alms, he bought that book. And some devotee went and told Prabhupada this. And Prabhupada was so happy that just to buy his books, he is begging money.
No, he was very advanced. He was a very advanced yogi before he even became a devotee. You know, just very potent. So when he took to Krishna consciousness, some devotees have so much in their bank account from the previous life that you see the caliber devotee that he is today. When you see this, the service that he renders Vaishnavas and Srila Prabhupada in Mumbai, you just can't fathom it. You have to see it. You have to taste it. It's so rich and so deep and very pure that it's purifying to see that Chaupati experience. Everyone should just at least once in your lifetime be so fortunate to have.
He underwent so many austerities to live in Vrindavan. Very difficult place to live, especially in winter.
It's hard. So much different than India. Much more austere than
India.
No
electricity.
Much more austere than India.
No water. And because he was so humble, even then, he was always so humble. The leaders of the temple would pile service on him.
Should come inside.
Who? Because Tulsi was playing outside, so I just asked him.
Can Taylor G come in?
Who Taylor?
He's this very Master Taylor. He's very sweet.
Why would...
Because Tulsi was playing outside.
Oh.
That's why
she's playing with the daughter.
Oh, he's with the daughter. I see. Okay. Sorry. Please go ahead.
Oh, I was just saying that they would add more service to what he was already doing. So he describes himself that... he was milking the cows, and then he would have to bring the milk down this very treacherous hill to the temple, and then he was doing, what, seven RTs a day? Seven offerings, seven RTs a day.
All the bathing and dressing.
Yeah, bathing, and then putting them to rest.
And the cows.
And milking the cows every day. And he would be up, he would have no time from 2 a.m., plus chanting the rounds and doing whatever else, and you know, people would come to see him. So from 2 a.m. till 11 p.m. at night, he was doing this active service like this.
For years.
For years he did that.
He's very remarkable. Very few I can't think of any devotees that I was engaged in some similar schedule like that, but not with the hardships that he did in Vrindavan. Just tremendously advanced.
Many hardships.
And now what he's, the quality that he's able to, that's the services that he's able to empower his disciples to do in Mumbai is just mind-boggling, isn't it? Everything that happens there, it's like a touchstone. Yeah, Guru Maharaj, that was my first experience in Guru Maharaj.
What was that incident when Maharaj came to Vrindavan, and in that time you were taking care of Srila Prabhupada's room in Radha Damodar temple, and I believe you met your Maharaj. That time he was
I did. But he tells on one tape about his first day in Vrindavan, and that is so amazing. Is it four tapes long? What is it, the story of where he's with the deity? And
Ghanashyam?
You know that Ghanashyam?
Gopi Janabala.
That, isn't that CD just unbelievable?
Yes.
I mean, that's when he just came off the Mathura station that Dina was mentioning, and got a ride to Vrindavan and Janmashtami, and then was involved with this incredible sadhu. And then he tells the story that now he's sitting in front of thousands of his own disciples, and this is the deity, Gopi Janabalava, that Ghanashyam worshipped. And it was such a magnificent story. Again, Gurdas and I were in Vrindavan, and if when I did meet Radhanath Swami then, I was closed down to some degree that we didn't have much of a relationship. I think I was really struggling with being a single woman in a world of men. I remember there was one Indian devotee that because our culture, I could be around the men and not ever think of sex life or be agitated. So we were like sisters and brothers. And we saw each other as sisters and brothers. But there was one Indian devotee that wrote Prabhupada a letter in 73, I think it is, that because I had been alone with a man in a room, that he wrote Prabhupada that I was having an affair with that man. Affair means something serious, not just talking. And so Prabhupada wrote back and said, "What is going on?" to my husband. Then several devotees in Vrindavan wrote and said, no, this is not happening. Yamuna has never done like that. But it traumatized me so much that I actually went to live for 4 or 5 days in a widow's ashram. And that was another kind of traumatic experience because I couldn't believe what the widows looked like. So I was trying to find my place as a woman in a man's world, doing men's service, in separation from Prabhupada, and that was a big challenge for me. Tremendous challenge. Because I tried to follow the culture of India of being 10% chaste, but then I also had service, where I was only around men. So that was a very big challenge for me. So even Radhanath might have come, and I was kind of closed down. I didn't open myself up to. I only did as little as I could with the service that I had to do with them, but I never became friendly at that period with the men, because I was fearful of being criticized. Prabhupada said, in Vrindavan, the disciples must act flawlessly. He said, if there's any mistake that a disciple makes in Vrindavan, you won't be criticized, I'll be criticized. Therefore, you must act flawlessly. So for me, finding my role, that was a little bit of a challenge. So I think when Radhanath Swami came, or anyone came, I just kind of tried to be in the background and not be seen but do my service. That was my mood then. Thank you for asking these questions.
Where did you go and stay, you said?
That there was a widow's ashram. Where was that? I asked the questions of two of your god brothers and god sisters, these doctors, that are here doing a hospice, Radhanath Swami disciples. Vishakapriya, what's her name? Yes. I asked them actually, he said now, today, there are 5 women's ashrams, widows ashrams. And he said the conditions in them are so horrible. I think 2 are run by the government, and 3 are private. And he said they're so neglected, it's just piteous. Well, that's what I saw also when I was in that ashram. The poverty, the filth, the lack of care, the lack of protection, struggle for existence was just, again, I couldn't process it. It was so so hard. But so I was trying to figure out how the culture produced this, and I couldn't. I was so young. I was only about 30, 28. It was hard to put it all together.
Can I ask a question of you? That's been really something I ask these doctors as well. That I've been trying to understand within the minds of the Indian people that, on the one hand, if you go in anyone's home, everything is very clean, everything is very neat, structured, bathing so many times a day, eating with only right hand and left not. Everything is so, seems organized and structured. But then if you go out, then there's garbage all over and open sewers and seems so much unclean and disorganized. And I'm wondering how does the psyche work that allows a people to compartmentalize in that way, personal cleanliness, and then it doesn't seem to extend beyond
the front door.
And I was wondering, how do you see that, and what do you attribute that to?
This is actually a struggle where we are just trying ourselves hard to maintain that kind of a lifestyle and teach our children also to keep clean.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But it's when we go outside, even we feel the same thing. Like
you do.
Yeah, we do.
You do.
Yes, of course. That like we don't find a place outside the house to sit somewhere, go and sit somewhere peacefully and in a clean place other than coming to a dham.
Mm-hmm.
But then like it's very difficult, but it's a struggle which is just going on, like, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We're just struggling basically that if we can go somewhere, or that's the reason why we often just go to Govindas or we just go to the temple because we don't find any good place outside.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Mm-hmm. But why is that? What is it within
because
this?
Because of the material afflictions, Mataji. Because people
just material.
Yes, mm-hmm. People are so much into material, like everything material, everything.
Mm-hmm.
Just yesterday, that Tulsi had PTM in her school, so I'd been to the school, and I just noticed that each and every mother with a child is just wearing jeans.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Yes.
I saw that when we shot that day.
Yes, yes.
There was not one woman.
Not one woman
without jeans and heels.
Not one woman.
Not one. Not in the whole market.
Yeah, and I was just thinking that how India is changing, and I was looking at myself that how will I manage myself with such people?
Mm-hmm.
Somehow we are devotees, but we have to live with them.
That's right.
Survival is with them.
Mm-hmm. Yes. That's the same for us in the West.
I think so.
Except the filth isn't there. That's what we're trying to say. When you go to Geneva, you don't find the garbage on the road so much. Do
or
you?
Singapore.
Or anywhere. There's little gardens in Europe. I mean, it's still Kali Yuga, but for some reason India is... I see India being buried under a mountain of plastic garbage.
Mm-hmm.
Do you understand what I mean?
Yes.
We just went to Jaipur, and it was just mountains of plastic bags.
Yes.
And this all happened in the last 10 years.
Exactly.
We didn't have plastic, or how many years has it been since we've had plastic?
20 years or something.
Maybe 20 years of plastic.
Yeah.
But I mean, if you go in the Parikram, even around Vrindavan, there's mountains of plastic.
Yeah.
When we went to the cows today, that road we went on, it's all over the side of the road.
Yeah.
So we were wondering
how is it that
they don't. It's the same as in another place. They just pile the garbage.
Materialism is advancing so much
fast
in India. I guess that's it.
We seriously lack actually a proper training on this part.
Mm.
Awareness.
How much is corruption?
Oh, it is always increasing. There is no declination in corruption.
What was your experience since we left you? You remember you were going to your brother's to do his political running? I bet that was a big challenge.
It was a big challenge, and it was a... I mean, big turning, actually, turning point.
Huh?
My brother lost the election.
Oh dear, first time?
No, second time he lost, one time he won. So last time he won, and this time he lost.
Oh, and what did that mean for him?
For him, it's like end of the career.
Mm-hmm. Oh, crushing.
Yes.
You
know, so now he's back to business.
Mm. Oh.
But it is, for me personally, I mean, it's a very good thing to understand Srila Prabhupada's teaching, mm-hmm. that this is really a slap of Maya, you know. Mm-hmm. One time it puts you on a very high position and suddenly puts out the chair.
You are
falling with more force.
Yes.
And you are not able to cope that situation.
No.
Because you have completely taken out your feet from that position.
Yes.
Actually.
Yes.
And you have so many projections, ambition, when you are sitting on that position.
Yes.
Second thing is that when you are in some position, people are coming to honor you.
Mm-hmm.
People are around you.
Yes.
As soon as the position is gone out of your hand, you become more than ordinary person.
Mm-hmm.
And very miserable in your heart.
Extremely
miserable. And that is the situation of my brother.
Yes. Oh my God.
Because he was used to receiving respect for that position.
Yeah. Bhagavad Gita says it's worse than death. Mm-hmm.
And second thing in India, it's like, you know, people who have money is everything.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It's a fact. Mm-hmm. That's the same as the West.
Mm-hmm. West is like that.
Same
doesn't matter how
West.
You get it. If
doesn't
you have
matter.
It,
just that's all that matters.
And that thing is, even in our movement, it's not affecting our movement.
Yes.
We've come to understand
devotees,
this.
Yes. When the devotees, they are rich enough, if they are able to provide all the facilities to the guests,
mm-hmm.
they are very nice and humble.
Yes.
But if some devotee is seriously humble, but he's not able to provide those facilities,
mm-hmm.
he's not even getting those opportunities.
Uh-huh, mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. We've heard this. We've heard this about, this is part of the huge growth of ISKCON in India.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
As we've heard that people are coming to ISKCON to become rich.
People who are rich are getting the opportunity to serve.
Sounds
it's as simple as that.
I've heard this.
Mm-hmm.
And
because
power.
He has the power to do everything.
Power.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, huge power.
In a way, if you go to think, it's not wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Because if a person is capable of doing that, it's better to give to that person who's capable of it.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
But sometimes there are some partialities which do happen.
Yes.
But that is again up to the Lord.
We heard them. Yeah. Isn't that the balance?
Mm-hmm.
So the same thing I was tasting in my lessons back 30 years ago, you are also being confronted with now.
Yes.
And just little different playing field.
Yes.
But same things we all have to...
Yes.
To get back to Godhead, more or less, we all have to go through different kinds of purifications.
But back
but
to
the answer,
this point,
it isn't there
is,
yet.
That I keep going back to, government of India, a people of India with largely Hindu background and training, they know who is Krishna, they know what holy Dham is, they know what holy river is,
true.
The Yamuna Ganga river, and yet there are no problems about dumping all the sewage in Delhi and Vrindavan.
Yeah, total illusion. Yeah,
yeah.
Total illusion.
See, in the West, one thing we do have that kind of linear thinking that that there are organizations, city, county, collectively, to keep everything functioning clean. You know, some level of cleanliness and some standard is there. But I can understand how corruption can be there in that aspect of government, but I don't understand how it can infiltrate
people.
The religiosity of the people to the extent that they don't understand the implication of all of this disrespect for the holy Dham, disrespect for the traditions. I don't understand it. It's just, I mean, it's like not, I don't even have an opinion about it or anything. I just completely
don't
understand, you know.
Most of the politicians and most of the people who are just running the country, they're just busy accumulating money.
Mm-hmm.
Because they just want the position, as Prabhuji said.
Uh-huh.
They just want position, and because they're getting position, they're getting the power.
Yes.
Rule. So that's all they are interested in.
They're
just not interested in the
Not helping the people.
Not really.
No.
Not really.
It was a different kind of political situation.
Where? How many years ago?
Around 20 years ago.
20 years ago.
Or what about 40 or 50? Was it then?
That was even better.
Even better.
I can say, because there was only one leading Congress party was existing in Indian political life.
Gotcha.
And it was like a monopoly for the Congress party to rule in India. Is a ruling party.
Yes.
But now in the recent time, there are so many small parties, including BJP, which is a rival party of Congress.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And every election, in every state or every parliament election, we see there is always alternate government.
Mm-hmm.
One time Congress alliance with some other party, another time it's a BJP with alliance with another party. So what is the situation now? They know if I win this election, I may get chance to rule in the country. But it is not certain that I may again win in the next election and I can become ruler of the country. So within that first winning, that 5-year period, between one election to another election, their mentality is always to as much as they can accumulate money. In whatever way. It is like they have one time, lifetime opportunity.
God, that's where it is. That's where it is.
Yes.
That's the answer.
Yes.
That's the answer, Dina. There you go.
Reason, that is because of their greediness.
Oh my God, there it is. There's your answer.
To fulfill their greed, they degrade themselves so much.
Oh my God.
They can allow anybody to do anything.
That's why our Srila Prabhupada said this
all those years ago when India got independence. He didn't like that. He did not think that they would be able to, without corruption, run a government here, because he would say that at least under the British there was cleanliness and things ran and everything was some more structured and more
and more disciplined.
Yes. Things ran on time and there was, you know, cleanliness very important and things like that. But I think that's the best answer that I've gotten so far, is that it's simply disinterested in anything but the selfish greed of
But in a sense you can see where that came from. After being subjugated by the British, who were the most egotistical in one sense, and horrible on one level, that then the idea of just trying to do it your own way, the best you can, and accumulating the power that you can to do it, just fell into place very quickly.
Well, there's one interesting thing about Gandhi. He had a vision that if India became too industrialized, that it would be disastrous for the country, that there
was
search for material.
And he warned many times to
warned. He wanted simple village system and people to stay structured in that way to try to save India from the West.
Yes. And to give employment to all the people.
That's right.
Because when there is a machine works equal to 10 or 100 people.
Yes.
So there is a similar number of people are unemployed.
Yes.
That's why he was very big favor in the preserving the handmade industry.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Right. Makes sense.
A good idea, but not. It's for us. Yeah, unfortunate. And I'm so sad to see. It's for me sad to see that, yes, Vrindavan, of course, is always Krishna. But it's sad to see that a lot of the interest for preserving Vrindavan, for cleaning up Vrindavan, is actually coming from Western devotees, the consciousness of Western, the Food for Life, the Friends of Vrindavan, the Raj Institute, the Care, all of these Western devotees who are coming and doing what the government actually should do.
Now they have this new government of this state, Uttar Pradesh, a lady is ruling, she is a chief minister, and she allotted around 250 or something like 25 million rupees, 250 million rupees to give proper road facilities for this Prajbhumi.
Right.
And hardly 5-10% amount will be spent for the real cost, all others will be
in
their
pockets. Isn't that interesting? Krishna.
This is always
happening. That's the way it is.
Yes.
So those people who are responsible to take care of the citizens or to to inspire the people to become a good and responsible person, they themselves are corrupted.
There's the answer.
And these corrupted people are coming among these people only.
Yes.
They are electing those people.
Yes.
You go and rule upon.
Yes. And her answer, that money is what matters now.
Yes.
But this is in that sense, it parallels the West.
Yeah.
That it's what matters now. I would like to know if Radha and Kar and Nimesh have some questions. You haven't been in on this dialogue very much, but the minute we met with them, we would sit and have Bhagavatam class, and then from Bhagavatam class, just have wonderful discussions and ask questions about making sense of many things that we were seeing and feeling and witnessing. So if you feel at any time like jumping in on the discussion, don't just sit there and feel not. They're just really wonderful. They're just very thoughtful, wonderful, honest devotees.
Mm-hmm.
And we really value having discussions with them. We did from the very moment we were with them. You don't get that with all devotees, actually.
2 years ago, when Guru Maharaj came to Delhi, then he spent some time in Rishikesh for his health problems.
Mm-hmm.
He came back to Delhi and on the way to Bombay. So he was staying at one devotee's house.
Mm.
And there he gave an evening talk with some very few number of devotees.
Mm.
And that time, His Grace Shyam Sundar Prabhu went to meet Guru Maharaj there in Rishikesh. And they spent some good time there. They were discussing about how India is degrading. And for that, Shyam Sundar Prabhu gave some very good information, which preacher like Maharaj, you know, they it's like for them preaching tool, how India is going in a different direction. And he mentions, according to Shyam Sundar Prabhu, that India, the pollution rate in India is increasing so dangerously that Maharaj mentioned that when he was staying in Himalayas around 70s, then early 70s, the snow which covered the peaks, the mountain, it was like a brilliant white. And in the 2 years ago when he was there, it was like a grayish white. And for that, Shyam Sundar Prabhu gave reason, because he is a geologist. So he mentioned that the India is becoming so rapidly, industrialization is going so fast here, they don't have any control over pollution.
Emissions.
And those carbon particles are going up to the ozone layer and they are getting reflected and coming down to the Himalayan mountains.
Yes.
And because of those carbon particles, the ice is melting rapidly and prematurely.
This is global, not just India.
I'm just coming back to the point what Maharaj said, and that was really devastating to my heart when I heard this thing. And these mountains are, this snow is melting very fast. By 2050, because of this rapid increase in pollution level in India, Maharaj mentioned this is because of greed. Because people have become so much greedy, don't care about anything.
No,
they just want to make money.
Their own enjoyment.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Exactly. So, by 2050, this is the prediction of the top scientists of the world, the group of the scientists, there will be no Ganga River in India. It will completely disappear.
Probably what they're finding out now is all their predictions about 2050 are shot.
Way off.
Now, we're talking about a down spiral so fast, going down now, that they can't even put numbers on what these children are going to be living like in by 2030 or 35 or 40. It's just going insanely fast. Too fast to even put numbers on.
Yeah.
So they were throwing 2050, but now those numbers are way off.
You know, they just had the Olympics in Beijing in China. And prior to that, a few months before that, the United Nations had done a report on the pollution and the horrible, disastrous impact of the world on the emissions of both China and India. And China now even more than India, if you can believe it. And so they put out this report, and on it, on the report,
there were so many things that they actually had to take out because the government of China became so upset that no one would come to the Olympics if they read this report. It was that bad about the pollution there. So for the Olympics, they actually closed down the factories in Beijing so that the athletes could breathe the air. But even then, virtually all of them were getting respiratory illness and disease during the Olympics and having trouble breathing. So one of the things that the United Nations Committee refused to take out of the report is that every year now, 1 million people in China are dying of pollution-related respiratory disease. 1 million people, yes. Just of that, every year. This isn't cancer or heart disease or anything. This is simply immediate impact of air quality. Hmm. Yeah.
Very fast, the whole point. Yeah.
Just that.
And it's true, India and China are the dots on the map that the whole world's watching now. Mm-hmm. It's just the changes in India and China as the two ancient cultures of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And what's happened in the last 5 years even? Mm-hmm. Just inconceivable.
How exciting.
So the more time is advancing and the more such
yeah.
For us it's good because it can make us more urgency for Krishna consciousness.
That's a fact. We have to become urgent. That's something we wanted also our young friends to feel by coming here, was a sense of importance, mm-hmm. of how to spend time.
Hello.
And
Hello.
How to prioritize your spiritual life in this very difficult time.
Oh, that's the number works.
Now it works with zero.
Oh, it always works.
Oh, okay.
It should always work.
Okay.